This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Krivitsky.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky on the mic. Jack McGraw running controls back in Houston. It is finally time to complete my NFL power rankings, giving you teams 10 through 1. I just left off at number 2. It was the LA Rams, the most balanced team in the NFC. I think that if the Rams draw the Bucks in the playoffs, it would not surprise me in the least if it's the same result, maybe less convincing fashion, but the Rams absolutely have what it takes to dethrone the defending Super Bowl champions. And at number 1, you guessed it, the Buffalo Bills. They have the highest scoring offense in the NFL, the top ranked defense in the league. Josh Allen, he got off to a slow start. There were a lot of concerns. Why is he not really throwing to the right side of the field? Why is he all of a sudden less effective to the intermediate level? We're not playing particularly stout competition. But don't worry, he has since performed at a very high level for this Bills offense, making it go. I hate to go to the well for a third time in this power ranking segment, but Josh Allen is absolutely an MVP candidate. In fact, many of the books in Vegas have him as the front runner right now. A part of how this context, when I talk about the highest scoring offense and the top ranked defense, how it came to be is that the Bills have also dealt with the fourth weakest schedule in football to this point. However, there's also the eye test, and it is clear that this team has all the ingredients necessary to win the Super Bowl. So I absolutely believe that the Buffalo Bills' schedule or not, you know, degree of difficulty being what it is, that they absolutely are a legitimate Super Bowl contender. And right now, they are the best team in the NFL. Make no bones about it. As for Kyrie Irving and the situation surrounding him, look, he's done a lot of great things off the court. He funded WNBA players' salaries during the bubble and all of that. And while the season was locked out, he has provided meals, tuition, supplies, and everything. But his reasoning for not getting the vaccine is disingenuous garbage. I'm not saying he doesn't feel bad for those who have lost their jobs due to choosing to not get the shot, but he absolutely is an anti-vaxxer, and that, more than anything, is a cover-up for that reality. It's not the main reason that he is chosen.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and Basketball Insider's Bobby Krivitsky.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky on the mic. Jack McGraw running controls back in Houston, making sure the trade stays on the tracks tonight. It is time for College Football Week 7 predictions, notes, and nuggets. Let's kick it off in the SEC. Number 11, Kentucky. At number 1, Georgia. The Wildcats defense has been stellar to this point, and I don't think gotten enough credit, or at least been on the radar of casual college football fans. They're only surrendering 17.5 points per game and 4.6 yards per play, so they have been stingy. They are the main reason that Kentucky is undefeated to this point in the season. It's going to be Stetson Bennett under center again, which does certainly lend itself towards a Wildcat upset. But nonetheless, Kentucky, in their lone road contest this season, which was at South Carolina, they only put 16 points on the board. So I just don't trust them on that side of the ball enough to ultimately beat Georgia. We know that the Bulldogs have an elite defense, and I ultimately think that the Dogs take it 27-10 in Athens. Let's move on. Number 12, Oklahoma State, taking on number 25, Texas. The question here is, can the Horns bounce back? That was a gut punch of a loss for them in the Red River rivalry, going down to the Sooners on the last play of the game with that touchdown run from Oklahoma. Texas, that's an inexcusable loss, especially given these circumstances. They led by 18 points late in the third quarter. You have to be able to pull that one out. Instead, It went away quickly. They bounced back with an impressive touchdown and then lost it in heartbreaking fashion. Not that it could go any way other than that when you have such a big lead and squander it to your rival. Nonetheless, this was a game that if they had beaten Oklahoma, could have really propelled them the rest of the season. Instead, it looks like we've got to keep the horns down. And then in this game against the Cowboys, it is a matchup of conflicting styles. Oklahoma State has one of the best defenses in the country. They're only surrendering 18.5 points per game and the second fewest yards per play. Texas, meanwhile, their goal is to turn this game into a shootout, something Mike Gundy acknowledged cannot happen if the Cowboys are to be successful. I don't even think that their offense is good enough to hold up their end of the bargain on that front and make it a high-scoring affair from both teams in this one. Ultimately, I think that the Longhorns prevail and they hand Oklahoma State its first loss of the season. 27-17 is my final score prediction. Let's move on to the Big Ten. We've got number 10, Michigan State, taking on Indiana, who is the home team in this matchup. Mel Tucker has done an outstanding job of quickly turning around the Spartans. And the two main reasons for that are his ability to take advantage of the transfer portal and getting players to come there who can contribute right away, like running back Kenneth Walker III, who leads the nation in rushing. He is a Wake Forest transfer that has made a huge impact as the focal point of their offense. And then secondly, Tucker has been proving that he's able to rope off their backyard and keep the talent in and around East Lansing at Michigan State. So that is a necessary ingredient as well, and it's already paying dividends. You would think the more success they have, top 10 team in the country right now, that as they build off that, they're going to once again get back to being attractive to the local high school talent in that area. Offensively, this is an explosive attack that ranks fourth in yards per play and loves to hit the home run. The Hoosiers, meanwhile, they have one of the worst run defenses in the Big Ten, and Michael Penix Jr. is likely out due to his shoulder injury. All of that spells loss for the Hoosiers. My prediction, Michigan State wins 31-17. Going back to the SEC, we've got number 20 Florida taking on LSU. It really looks like Coach O might have had the least to do with that national championship season. Certainly he's a guy that people rally around, and I don't discount the value in that. But Joe Brady was at the helm of their offense. They lost their defensive coordinator as well. And they had so much NFL talent on both sides of the ball, including at quarterback with Joe Burrow. So that was a fantastic season, and good for Coach O to come home and win a national championship. But now he's on the hot seat, deservedly so, and the shine from that season has worn off by now. This is a rivalry game, though, and you can throw a lot of the context out the window for what's happened leading up to it when you get a matchup like that. The Gators, they lost last year because Marco Wilson was penalized for throwing an LSU player's shoe, which set up the game-winning field goal for the Tigers. Meanwhile, Florida's defense, they're playing well. Since the first frame against Alabama, that's 10 quarters. They've only given up two touchdowns. So this Gators defense, they seemed rattled by the moment when they came out there for that first quarter against Alabama. But since then, have steadied themselves and are performing the best they have of any juncture this season. The Tigers, on the other hand, it's going the opposite direction. They're missing their four best defenders for this game on Saturday, as well as their number one wide receiver. So I think that Florida takes it 24-10. We've got Clemson and Syracuse. That game is going on right now. The Tigers lead it 14-7 in the third quarter. However, what I ultimately think about this matchup, and we can zoom out to look beyond just what's happening tonight. Clemson right now, for those of you who don't know, they're outside the top 25 in the AP poll, and it is deservedly so. Preseason, remember, this is who we all anticipated to be the team most capable of giving Alabama a run for its money and knocking off the Tide should they meet up in the national championship. They are far from being able to contend with Alabama or any of the top teams in the country right now. As a matter of fact, in their last matchup, which was at home against Boston College, by no means a powerhouse, they should have lost the game. BC was marching down the field with ease against their defense. A touchdown would have won it. And instead, BC, after a near interception, fumbled the snap and was not able to recover it, allowing Clemson to run out the clock and survive. They did get a week off, and that might be what propels them to getting back on track, but they're going to have to go up against Syracuse running back Sean Tucker, who has put up a stat line to this point of 791 rushing yards, 204 receiving yards, and 11 touchdowns. And according to David Hale of ESPN, the last Power 5 back with that type of a stat line won the Heisman Trophy. It was Reggie Bush in 2005, one of the greatest collegiate seasons ever, period. And Clemson, on top of that, they're averaging the fourth fewest points per game against FBS teams in regulation. So even though they are coming off a bye week, there is a lot that they need to get straightened out. They are winning, like I said, 14-7 in the third quarter. Ultimately, though, I'm sticking with my pregame prediction, which is that the Orange prevail 27-24. Let's use this time now to circle back to Kyrie Irving, because we only got a little bit of the conversation in there before our last commercial break. So like I said, this is someone who has done a lot of good in the community, but on this instance, his reasoning saying that the reason that he's not being vaxxed is not because he is against getting the shot. It's not because he's an anti-vaxxer. It is because he wants to stand up for those who have lost their jobs due to choosing not to get the shot. And that is a bunch of disingenuous garbage. Don't believe it for a second, which is not to say that he's not empathetic towards those people who have gone through that experience, but it is a cover-up for him deciding that he doesn't want to get the vaccine. And what's a shame is that he, at a moment's notice, could get as good a resources as you're able to find to talk to him and educate him on this matter. But he has chosen the position of, I don't trust the long-term effects, and so therefore, there's no one who can get through to him on this. He's just got the stubborn, hard-headed stance and ignoring the data that continues to pour in and the science behind it. All you have to look at is every living U.S. president, all 50 state governors, every member of Congress, and 72% of the eligible population is vaccinated. Meanwhile, over 99% of everyone dying from COVID-19 is unvaccinated. Do with that what you will. Stick with us here on the Diehards. When we come back, we will dive into my NFL Week 6 predictions, notes, and nuggets. And after that, at 9:40, we will be joined by David Brown, a Baseball Writers of America member and an MLB reporter for Bally Sports. You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and basketball insiders Bobby Krivitsky.
When you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com and pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. They'll even bring it out to you curbside, or you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky alongside Jack McGraw. And so it is time, like I said, we just did college football, week 7, predictions, notes, and nuggets. It's time to do the same with the NFL as we are on the horizon of week 6 in the National Football League. Let's start with the Cowboys and the Patriots, a showdown that will take place in Foxborough. Dallas is less than a half a point behind the highest scoring offense in the NFL, which belongs to the Buffalo Bills. Meanwhile, the Patriots, they're coming off an ugly win against the Houston Texans, where they had to come from behind against one of the worst teams in the league. New England, they've got a top five scoring defense, which might surprise some of you, but they also have one of the least dangerous offenses in the NFL. Dallas, they continue to get better defensively, led by Micah Parsons and Trayvon Diggs, who is going to play in this game. I know he's dealing with that ankle injury, but Jerry Jones made it clear that he's going to be suiting up, as is franchise left tackle Tyron Smith. And they're just too good of a team, especially when it comes to how many points they can put on the board. So I firmly expect the Cowboys to come to Gillette Stadium and leave with a victory. My final score prediction, 27-17 in favor of Dallas. In the morning, things get started early between the Dolphins and the Jaguars out in London. The Urban Meyer era has been a disaster. He never should have been hired. That decision reflects poorly on Shad Khan, their owner. And with this opportunity and everything that's gone down recently involving Meyer, that was the perfect opportunity for the Jaguars to move on from him. However, clearly, he's still the guy in charge there, and he's got a fractured locker room that doesn't trust him as a result to deal with. But the Brian Flores time in Miami, it's not going well this season, and I'm a big fan of B. Flo. I think he is an excellent head coach and leader, but for whatever reason, it's just not translating on the field this year. I don't know how much of that has to do with him or whatever the case may be. You know, I get that they lost Tua, their starting quarterback, but he's an average quarterback in the NFL, so the drop-off to Jacoby Brissett is negligible, and their defense, which is supposed to be very good and has the talent to, and they've invested the resources, whether it's first-round picks like Christian Wilkinson or it's the money to bring in Byron Jones to the secondary and to keep Xavier Howard, but it's just not translating on the field for whatever reason, so if there is no turnaround, you've got to wonder what's at the root of it and how patient Chris Greer is willing to be with his head coach, because that's ultimately who it falls on, whether he's directly responsible for it or not. The Jaguars, meanwhile, after this game, they go into their bye week. That is another logical opportunity to part ways with Urban Meyer, but if they get a victory, then they're probably not going to do so, and he's probably going to continue to stick it out. It's certainly plausible that he just leaves at a random week during the season, Bobby Petrino style, back when he was running the Falcons. I think that Urban is going to gut through this season, and then he'll be gone. And the Jaguars, they won't want him back, certainly. There's probably a lot of people in that organization who feel that way right now. And so ultimately, I do think that as far as this week goes, Jacksonville gets the win, but that situation isn't really getting any better. It's just going to temporarily mask it to a pretty small extent, if you ask me. But I do think the Jags get off the schneid this weekend with a 20-17 victory. We talked with Connor Mack, sports handicapper from Pub Sports Radio, about his advice for how to bet Packers-Bears. This one takes place in the Windy City. Chicago continues to boast a top-10 defense. Now they've got Justin Fields under center, no longer Andy Dalton. Fields managed the game well against the Raiders. He only threw one touchdown pass, but that's one more than Derek Carr had. And the question is, can he lead them to victory? Connor's advice spoke more towards how to deal with the spread. When it comes to actually pulling out a dub, that's where I'm skeptical about Justin Fields being able to come through for the Bears. He's just not at that stage in his development, doesn't have enough NFL experience yet to do so. They're also dealing with some key injuries at running back. So ultimately, I think Green Bay prevails 24-13 in a rivalry showdown in Chicago. Then we've got the Chargers and the Ravens in Baltimore. This is one of the games that I'm most excited about. Two evenly matched teams, two very good franchises. The Ravens defense, however, is allowing the third most passing yards per game. The Chargers, meanwhile, 2-0 as a betting underdog, which is the case for their matchup on Sunday. Instinctually, I want to pick the Ravens to build off Monday night's come-from-behind win against the Colts and take care of business at home against the Chargers. However, my prediction is that if you can't stop the pass, then you're in for a long day at the office and that the Chargers ultimately outscore Lamar Jackson and company 34-30. Then we've got the Arizona Cardinals taking on the Cleveland Browns in Cleveland. The Browns are good. The Cardinals are better on both sides of the ball. That's the case. But the great equalizer comes in the run game, where, as I talked about in my power rankings, the Browns have the best duo in the league with Chubb and Hunt, and the Arizona Cardinals, that is their deficiency defensively. They're not a good tackling team. They're not stout against the run. They're one of the worst in the league in that regard. And what that also allows them to do is keep Kyler Murray off the field, control the clock. Once again, as long as they can avoid the game coming down to Baker winning for them with his arm, which this, you know, again, Arizona not being able to stop the run, that sets up nicely for Cleveland being able to accomplish that objective, then they're in good shape. So I think the Browns get this win over the Cardinals at home 24-20. Meanwhile, we've got the Raiders and the Broncos in Denver, a rivalry matchup with certainly a much bigger story unfolding off the field as it pertains to the Raiders. John Gruden's a terrible person, and the rest of those emails need to come out. However, while it certainly is an emotionally taxing situation for that franchise, Gruden leaving is also liberating for them. So I think that this is a team who, what I hope they would look at is that they recognize they're capable of being a wild card team and that they use this to come together and it galvanizes them and they're able to rally off of it instead of it being the type of distraction that just completely pulls down their season and erases any of their playoff hopes entirely. And so it also helps that they're going up against the Broncos team that is depleted offensively. Jerry Judy's not back yet. KJ Hamler's out for the season. But Denver did show impressive resiliency in Pittsburgh, taking on a very good defense. They were down 24-6 in the fourth quarter in the Steel City. And what it came down to was Pittsburgh being able to make a stand with the Broncos at their 3-yard line. So you got to give them credit for that. Teddy Bridgewater's done a very effective job of managing the game for them. Denver's defense is also allowing the second fewest points per game. So that certainly helps. But ultimately, maybe this is a little too much of hoping that the Raiders are able to rally in light of everything that's gone on that isn't their fault. But I think Las Vegas is ultimately going to take a very close rivalry matchup and prevail with a 27-24 victory in the Mile High City. On Sunday Night Football, we have got the Seattle Seahawks taking on the Pittsburgh Steelers. No Russell Wilson equals no victory. It's that simple. Geno Smith, he came into that Thursday night game against the Rams and played well. He's had 10 days to prepare for this next one. That pick against Los Angeles at the end obviously wasn't his fault. His intended target, Robert Woods, tripped over a defensive back's foot, falls down. That happens after Geno Smith has already released the ball, so translates to an interception that you can't hang on the quarterback. Nonetheless, this team, the Seahawks, that is, so much of the operation relies on Russell Wilson. It's not a good defense. The run game is mediocre. It's all about Russell Wilson. And so when you don't have your franchise quarterback, you're not the same team. Pittsburgh, like I said, the defense has been dragged down by how poorly Big Ben has been playing and the fact that their offense struggles to stay on the field, but they still show you that it is a really good unit and still one of the most talented in football, even though the numbers aren't at the elite level that they were a season ago. So I think that Pittsburgh at home in primetime, they're able to make it 2 wins in a row with a 27-13 victory. And then we've got the Buffalo Bills and the Tennessee Titans in Nashville on Monday Night Football. The Titans defense is absolutely horrendous. It is as bad, if not worse, than advertised in the offseason. The Bills, meanwhile, as I said during my power rankings, which they took the top spot in, they are the most balanced team in the NFL. They have the highest scoring offense, and their defense is giving up the fewest points per game. Josh Allen, I think that he uses this game, another opportunity in primetime, to build on his MVP case. I think that Bills Mafia comes out of this one with a 37-27 victory. Allen just, again, to start the season, there were some minor concerns. Is this just rust? Why is he not throwing to the right side of the field? Is that injury related? Was it a fluke that he was so effective throwing to the intermediate part of the field, and now he's not? His efficiency dipped in half in that regard through the first 2 weeks of the season. I know it's early, but you know how Bills Mafia gets, so there was certainly some people who were hovering over the panic button, even if they hadn't pushed it quite yet. And instead, what he's shown you the last few weeks is that he's one of the best quarterbacks in football. Some people probably aren't ready to go that far when it comes to anointing Josh Allen, but like I said, you go look around and a lot of the betting community considers Josh Allen the forefront for the MVP. It is a narrative driven award, and I think he's got that on his side as well, which tends to pay dividends when deciding who ultimately walks away with it. Let's give you a quick update on the ALCS. It is 3-1 Red Sox over the Astros. Houston jumped on Boston first, getting up 1-0. But since then, Kike Hernandez robbed the Astros with the bases loaded and two outs, and then came to the dish and belted a 448-foot home run to help them take it. Stick with us here on the Diehards. Coming up next, we will be joined by David Brown, a member of the Baseball Writers Association of America and an MLB reporter for Bally Sports. You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and basketball insiders Bobby Krivitsky.
The Diehards is presented to you by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can. You are listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky on the mic. Jack McGraw running controls back in Houston. Pretty soon we are going to be joined by none other than David Brown, a Baseball Writers Association of America member and an MLB reporter for Bally Sports. So I can't wait to get his thoughts as we do a deep dive on the playoffs. First, let's give you an update on the ALCS. The Red Sox are on top of the Astros, 3-1 in the bottom of the third inning. They just took Chris Sale out of the game. The runs come courtesy of a Hunter Renfroe RBI double that drove Rafi Devers home. J.D. Martinez grounded into a fielder's choice before that to make it 2-1. And before that, it was a Kike Hernandez 448-foot solo blast that tied the game up at 1. So all three Red Sox runs came in the top of the third. And that was preceded by the Houston Astros striking first in the bottom of the first frame, thanks to an Alvarez sacrifice fly that brought Jose Altuve home to score. So like I said, 3-1 Red Sox in the bottom of the third inning, two outs, and Chris Sale taken out of the game in favor of Adam Ottavino right now. He'll face Yuri Gurriel when the game resumes, which will be shortly. Meanwhile, in college football, I just gave you my predictions, notes, and nuggets, and one of them is that Syracuse will pull off the upset against a struggling Clemson Tiger squad, even though Clemson just had its bye week and right now leads 14-7 heading into the final frame. I think that Syracuse is going to pull out a nail-biter in a game that comes down to the wire. We are excited to be joined right now by David Brown, a Baseball Writers Association of America member and an MLB reporter for Bally Sports. David, thanks for taking the time to join us on the Diehards tonight.
Hi, Bobby. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. We're glad to have you on the program. Let's start with the ending to last night's Dodgers-Giants game. Do you want check swings to be reviewable, or do you believe human error is a part of the game and you have to take the good with the bad?
You know, that's a really good question. I mean, if we're going to have replay, I would like most plays to be reviewable, and a whole bunch of them aren't for various reasons, and this is one of them. One thing we need to do first. It's funny. Baseball doesn't have anywhere written down what a swing is. So, like, if we were to, like, ask umpires, I bet we'd get different interpretations. We asked 100 of them what a swing is. So first they got to figure out exactly what a swing is. You know, if it breaks the plane of the plate, you know, if you break your wrists, whatever that means, that's from, you know, when we were kids. I think you got to write it down first. We got bit by an unwritten rule last night, too. There's no way to know what a swing is unless you get like 10 different definitions. You know, that was a really bad call. I think, you know, umpires are trained to make that call when it looks more obvious than it was. And I think the umpire in question, Gabe Morales, screwed up. So, you know, that's not the only reason the Giants lost. You know, who knows what happens subsequently. It's probably in Scherzer's favor anyway. But, you know, short answer after a long answer, yes, I'd like it to be reviewable.
Yeah, I think everyone's of that mindset, including Gabe Morales. And like you said, they got robbed of their last opportunity, but there was an entire game that played out before that, and certainly other factors responsible for why the Giants came up short, and a great season for them. Most wins in franchise history in the regular season went up in smoke. Let's pivot now to the ALCS. Red Sox on top of the Astros 3-1. What are your thoughts on how this game has played out?
Kike Hernandez, again, just an amazing dude in the postseason. He was actually having, you know, making that free agent contract, as far as the regular season goes, worth it for half the year or three quarters of the year, and then kind of tailed off toward the end, especially against right-handed pitching. That's why I think the Dodgers were okay with letting him go, because he wanted to play every day. They didn't think that he could hit right-handers every day. You know, they sort of were proved right a little bit by that, but here we are in the playoffs. He's hitting right-handed, left-handed, underhanded. Everybody's making great plays on defense. He's, you know, he's tuned up for the postseason, and that's really why the Red Sox got him. And what a great performer he's been so far. And Jose Altuve with the big error, and the Astros are kind of showing also that, you know, their pitching is not the best part of their team. You know, that their lineup is terrific. They're a team of hitters. They're only okay in the starting rotation, especially without Lance McCullers. So that's going to be an interesting thing to see going forward, how, you know, Framber Valdez does if he gets another chance. Is the bullpen going to be able to hold the Red Sox down? Because the Red Sox, of course, have a great lineup too. So lots of stuff going on. I mean, this kind of looks like a seven-game series too off the bat.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that take right there. This has the makings of going the distance. What's the X factor for each team in this series?
I think the X factor maybe with the Red Sox would be that they wouldn't have Fedway in game 6 and 7. That might work against them a little bit. The Astros are in that with getting the better record. So that's the one point. And the other point, the other X factor, I think he just came into the game, actually. Christian Javier had a really good game against the White Sox in the postseason. Hadn't been, you know, he'd been pitching all right, but, you know, he's a guy that's going to have to come through for them in long relief, you know, 2 or 3 innings if the starters are going to be like this with Framber Valdez in the first game. So the Astros' X factor is going to be the guys in the middle, you know, Phil Maton and Javier. I don't know if Brooks Raley is going to get in too much, but those guys, the end of their bullpen is good. The middle of the bullpen, sort of questionable coming in, but they had a good series against the White Sox, so I think that's important for them to keep that up.
Our producer, Jack McGraw, is an Astros fan, so he's going to be listening intently to your answer to this next question. Do you think Carlos Correa is an Astro next season? And if not, I'd like your prediction on where he ends up.
You know, I'm thinking the possibly, because Jim Crane has been, you know, seemingly open to, you know, further negotiation, even though after they passed the deadline or whatever, you know, maybe 25% Astros, maybe 75% Yankees. I think that's a good place for him. You know, they got lots of money, and he's going to want lots of money, and there's going to be other shortstops available. But, you know, he's the total package. He's a great defensive player, excellent offensive player. You know, the one hang-up, I guess, with him would be, is his back going to, you know, hold up for the entirety of that contract? So I think there is a chance that he's back with the Astros. Jim Crane certainly could afford it, you know, after all those years of not spending anything. They got lots of money, but the, you know, the Yankees have more money than everybody. So I would say that that's the more likely destination.
We're going to get to the Yankees shortly, but as for the NLCS, what are the keys to the Braves pulling off an upset?
I think that it's what we saw. The Braves have a pretty good, you know, they not only put together a decent regular season team, but they have, you know, they pieced together a pretty good lineup for, you know, for the playoffs here. And they have lots of guys who can, you know, they don't have Acuna, but they have guys that can move the ball around as far as getting guys on base and hitting for extra bases. So I think, you know, Jorge Soler continues to hit. They got a Dansby Swanson maybe playing above his pay grade a little bit. You know, they have a couple of superstar type guys, but then they have some Jock Peterson types who kind of show up for the big moment. And if they can continue to do that, I think they're going to have decent enough starting pitching. The end of the bullpen was terrific in the previous series, better than I thought they would be. But I think they continue to need to put bat on the ball. I mean, that's going to be tough against the Dodgers. But if they can keep up with the runs on offense, they can win that series.
And as for the Pinstripes, they did not renew the contracts of third base coach Phil Nevin and hitting coach Marcus Thames. But right now, it seems like Aaron Boone's job is safe on opening day next year. Do you believe he'll still be their manager?
I think so. I'm surprised, but just how things have unfolded so far, like you said, the offseason so far, letting the coaches go, and it just sounds like they want to surround Boone with some personalities that are different than him. That, you know, the signals, though, that I get from the Yankees front office, sort of frustrating as a fan. It sounds a lot like the stuff that George Steinbrenner used to say about how they got to be tougher and meaner with the players. And I don't think, you know, toughness and meanness and, you know, motivation is necessarily what's keeping the Yankees back. I think, you know, they have some injury problems sometimes, and I think maybe the front office, you know, didn't necessarily fill the roster with, I know they spent all this money, but, you know, they don't want to go over the luxury tax. They don't want to make up for mistakes that the front office makes as far as signing players or trusting in certain players. I think the Yankees need to spend a little more money. That's what they need to do. Is Boone, you know, a great manager, according to Yankees fans and media that I follow? Not really, but is he the problem? Probably not either. I think it's more getting the production off the players in the field and having enough guys. I mean, they were down to their fourth string center fielder and so forth this year. And that's not necessarily Nasmith's fault in the beginning, but, you know, did they make enough moves to cover for it? I don't think so either. So I think management needs to look at itself more than what Boone is doing.
So then I'll ask you, it seems like Brian Cashman is going to continue to lead their front office. It's one of the most attractive positions in all of sports. So is that for the best, or is it time for a change?
I think the problems with the Yankees front office are above Brian Cashman. The decisions that are made by, you know, Hal Steinbrenner or people above Cashman. I think Cashman's doing as good a job as you can do. It's amazing that he hasn't burned out of it and is still going. I think they haven't won a World Series in 2009. To some degree, of course, that's his responsibility as the GM. But like I said before, you know, they have to be able to, they got to spend like the Dodgers will spend or teams that go over the luxury tax. They can't be afraid to do that. They're using it as a salary cap. That's not what it was intended for. And that's not what I would stand for if I was a Yankees fan.
Yeah, well said. Totally agree. And the Yankees fans that I'm friends with and just seeing in general that group on Twitter, they are not standing for it and not thrilled with how things have played out with their franchise in recent years. Let's make a hard pivot here. Some people don't like the wild card game because it's one and done. Do you think they should keep it as is, or would it be better if it was a series?
I don't think the thing about making it a series is you don't really add that much fairness, quote unquote, to it. You know, it's not, I mean, even a World Series that's 4 out of 7, you know, sabermetrically, analytically, that's not anywhere close to what happens during a regular season. You're not going to simulate in the playoffs, no matter what we do, what happens during the regular season. That's two different animals. There's a lot more randomness involved in the postseason. There certainly are guys that step up and are big-time players, and there's lots of drama. You know, I think we keep the wild card, maybe add one more team, I don't know, and figure out how to do that. But I don't know, I don't think adding series, 2 out of 3 isn't going to make that much of a difference. It's just going to extend the playoffs in a way, you know, that isn't great. And now that I think about it, even adding teams, I don't like. I mean, I kind of like what they have now. I think it's good. I know what it is. It's just entertainment. It's not, it's not about necessarily figuring out who the best team is. It's about, who's the best team of the moment, and that's fine. So I think one and done wild card is exciting, especially for casual fans, and they should keep it.
You nailed it, David. You made a good statistical argument, and I like the drama. One and done, anything can happen. I say keep it as is.
Right.
If you could make any in-game rule changes, what would they be?
Maybe going back to the beginning of the conversation when we said, let's find out what a swing is and, can we check it? And there was another play in the Braves game where there was a play, if it happens in front of the umpires on the infield, the play in its entirety, you're not supposed to be able to review it. I think we need if we're going to have replay, let's add that. So I don't know if that counts as an in-game rule. Yeah, let's put down on paper what a swing is. That's my in-game rule.
I'm with it, David. He is David Brown, a Baseball Writers Association of America member and an MLB reporter for Bally Sports. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us tonight.
Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Stick with us here on the Diehards. We're going to take a quick commercial break, but on the other side of it, we will be back to wrap up tonight's show. You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and basketball insiders Bobby Krivitsky.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky on the mic. Jack McGraw producing the show back in Houston, making sure the train stays on the tracks tonight. It is time for the final segment. We've covered everything from Thursday night football between the Bucs and the Eagles, my thoughts and especially my concerns related to Jalen Hurts as well as Nick Sirianni. We've discussed the MLB playoffs from every angle. We just had David Brown on, a Baseball Writers Association of America member, an MLB reporter for Bally Sports, to talk about not only the team still playing, but the New York Yankees and any rule changes that he would make to better the game. We've done college football week 7 predictions, notes, and nuggets. Done the same for the NFL in week 6. We talked about Kyrie Irving. We had Connor Mack on, a professional sports handicapper for Gambling Corner, to give you his advice for everything from live betting tonight's Red Sox-Astros game to how to approach the NFL and college football slates this weekend. Now it is time to kick it over to Jack McGraw to give us his favorite take that he heard on the program tonight, as well as his least favorite.
Well, my favorite one so far has to be the praise that you gave the Cowboys early on. I think that the Cowboys, I think it's not a hot take at all to say they're the best team in the NFC East, and I think they should represent it. Shoot, they might win it by early November with the way that they're playing and everyone else has been. My least favorite, of course, was your prediction that the Red Sox will beat the Astros. At first, when I heard it, I was like, no way, no way, no way. And watching this game, you have a little bit more credibility now, but like the break, it's only the fourth inning, and there's a whole lot of baseball left to be played.
So I like that you mixed it up and did one football-related, the other MLB-related. I'm not surprised that you didn't like my prediction that the Red Sox once again successfully punch slightly above their weight class and pull off an upset. Nonetheless, I am a bit surprised you didn't find a way to wedge in there David Brown's prediction that he leans towards, and heavily, I might add, Carlos Correa re-signing with the Houston Astros in the offseason. I thought for sure that you might find a way to mention that. Thank you so much to everyone for listening to the Diehards tonight on the Sports Map Radio Network. Hope you enjoyed it, and hope that you have a great weekend. For Jack McGraw, I'm Bobby Krivitsky, signing off. Enjoy the rest of this game, as well as your weekend.